The following program is being brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
What do you know about how to get beyond your mundane, everyday thoughts? Do you understand how our thoughts create our reality in a real and practical way? Do you desire tools to help you live from another space, full of freedom and liberation from self-imposed limitation? You can create whatever it is you desire. Welcome to Create Your Best Life Ever with your host, Allison J.K. Get ready to receive clear information, tools, and healing presented by Allison and her guests to help you better know what else is possible.
Hi, on this yummy long weekend. How we doing? Thanks for tuning in. Trying to say tune and chime at the same time. So today is going to be a little bit of a different show. I've yet to do this on any of my shows. It's me today, and I'm taking a break intentionally from guests, planting this show with just me. One, because I've had people request it, and two, because there's an intentional, like, so here's the teacher in me, right? The unit planner, one class plus another class is building up towards a certain message, and that's how I approach my radio show. And in the last 6 weeks, we've had a lot of people coming on and talking about money and business and freeing up the flow around that. Next week, we have on Access Consciousness's facilitator for being the right rich, for right riches for you. Curry's coming on next week, and then the following week is Bruce Lipton, who is going to be talking to us about The Honeymoon Effect, his new book. It's fantastic. It's quite different work, too, for Bruce Lipton. Wayne Dyer apparently says that Wayne Dyer apparently says it's his favorite book ever. And Bruce is going to be talking to us quite a bit about the actual impact on our body's biochemistry when we have certain types of thoughts. So he's going to be explaining much more of the mechanics and science and the impact on our body behind when we think certain ways, to really understand that it is a science, in fact, at this point, and it's an understood science. It's been understood for centuries in ancient cultures, what our thoughts do, like the Indian culture, which is why they developed meditation, and the Taoist ancient Chinese culture, which is part of where they were coming from with adopting Buddhist meditation when it came to them, as well as working with the Qi, the subtle life force energy in Qigong that eventually graduated into becoming Tai Chi and what we know as martial arts today. But Qigong is the cultivation of power of this subtle life force energy. Bruce is going to be explaining how when we have thoughts that aren't in our positive, opening, expansive direction, how that detracts from our body's health. So you guys, it is a science nowadays. And excuse me, gals, for when that's from still left over from the Boston going into the you guys. He's going to really be helping us understand how it is a science nowadays. My book does that too. What If There's Nothing Wrong? And the banner's right above the at the top of the page if you want to click on it to see how about getting it. And it's worth talking about. And I do it in a way that I've been told repeatedly. It's different. Those of my long-term listeners also know this. It's different than the way it seems to get explained out there. It's not the secret where it's overly simplified and how you can use your thoughts to create wealth or get stuff. My 10 years in Asia gives a very different feel to the work that I do because I went there with the intention to study subtle energy. I went there already as an energy healer and working full-time as a teacher in the classroom and then working part-time as a natural healer alongside that here in the States before I left and then doing the same over there, researching how they understand subtle energy, eventually taking my practice as a yoga practitioner into becoming certified in India as a yoga teacher, having the 20 years of meditation backed by all the work I did with the local Buddhists and then the Hindu Buddhists and the Thai Buddhists when I went on vacation, and understanding that the premise to Buddhism, which is actually a backdrop to the Western Hemisphere is, listen to this sentence, every human mind is a neurotic mind. Every human mind is a neurotic mind. So what I just said is that Bruce Lipton's going to be coming on in 2 weeks and helping us understand the science of when we go neurotic, what that does to our bodies. In the Eastern Hemisphere, having the backdrop of Buddhism as a philosophy, not necessarily a religion, y'all. It's not that kind of dogmatized, structured services that the entire population is involved in, like it is in the West with church and Islam and Judaism. It's different. It doesn't come across as a religion in the way our Western religions do. It comes across more as a philosophy. And so I know that what I tend to do and give people, because I am, like most people who work with the chakras are either energy healers or yoga practitioners. And it's not common that you hear yoga practitioners really talk about the chakras in depth, because that's not usually included in the training here in the West. And when it is, it's very, very brief. Like I taught at the yoga studio I teach at, Wendy Fit Yoga, that we just moved yesterday. Yay, new location, better, bigger, lighter space. I was brought in there to be the person who taught meditation and also the person who does the part of the teacher training on the chakras and on Ayurveda, because it's just not really taught here, even with the Yoga Alliance requirements when you get certified as a yoga teacher with the standards. So there's a holistic approach to yoga that beyond the beauty and the benefits of the beauty, that's the outcome from doing the regular poses for the tight toned core and butt and legs and arms, is what we're really doing is working with the subtle energy. What we're really doing is working with the life force, the chi in the Chinese culture, the prana in the Indian culture, in opening up our spines and opening up our chakras so that that life force energy can freely move up and down the spine and up and down and through the chakras. So if the chakras are open, and I've done many shows on the chakras, you guys can look back, then they're turning that life force energy out to the different parts of the body. The heart chakra is in between the breasts in the center. All chakras are down the center line, right? When we have a closed down heart chakra, each chakra corresponds to a chunk of consciousness in life. And each, so the heart chakra has the positive spectrum, unity, compassion, love, self-love. And on the negative end of the spectrum, resentment, blame, anger, frustration, even rage. And resentment and blame is more common as why a heart chakra would be kind of like simmering out its juice instead of blasting out its juice. So that what can happen is in that area, the breasts, the front shoulders and the arms and the elbows and the wrists don't get the life force energy flushed down throughout. So it's a science. And it's funny because I had somebody laying on my table a couple of weeks back and she was like, it's all about positive thinking, right? And my mind was blown because I'm so far removed from that. And again, my intention with moving to the East was, yeah, to teach at the international school for my full-time career, but absolutely to enhance my meditation practice and in particular to enhance my ability to flow the energy for my, I was at that time carrying only Reiki as a master, a Reiki master when I went there. And I since have added on, I don't know how, 4 more modalities, 5 actually, and they're listed on my website if you're interested. I don't want to list them now. But to impact the strength and power that comes through my hands that I'm channeling, and it absolutely did that, and an increased understanding of how to work with the subtle life force energy. So another thing that is worth giving you guys is, there's 2 things that just came up. When I came out of a session one time a couple of months back, and this, you're going to want to kind of listen more closely here with this one because it's a little bit, there's energy behind it. I mean, this whole show always is a transmission. When you're receiving what I'm saying, it's a transmission with the energy behind the words that I carry. And so it's helping your being to shift, even though it's not, even though the words are what they are, it's helping your being to raise its vibration and to shift in these areas where there's stuck consciousness that I touch upon. When I was out of a session a couple of months back, I was standing outside looking at the sky, and I don't remember what the client had. It was a physical malady. I don't remember specifically what it was. And I was during the topical triage treatment, because some of the energy medicine modalities I use for spiritual awakening or for helping release the flow in an area, opening the chakras, emotional balance, mental calm and peace, and other ones I use for the full-on physically manifested illnesses and diseases that have been diagnosed, like a breast lump or a brain tumor or a knee injury or another sports injury or chronic back pain or post-surgery. And so I had come out of a treatment where it was working on somebody's physicalness. And I still will never completely shift back into the American way. I mean, I got really rewired in my 10 years there because I thrust myself so full on into the teachings of that culture and immersed myself. That culture primarily being the Chinese, but the Eastern Hemisphere. And I found it weird to be paying attention to the physical. I found it weird in a way that was illogical to be, because I also in that session, whenever somebody comes to me something physical, I'm also working with the chakra in that area of the body that's connected to the physical issue. So if it's hips, I'm working with second chakra. For example. So I just had this hit, like after having been back in the States for, at that point, it's probably like 2.5 years. Like, this is the way we approach stuff in America. We approach stuff from the physical. Why would we do that when there's enough proof by now to show that where the continuation is that thing that animates a body. So when we look at a dead body of someone we love, why they look so different. The face is not animated, obviously. The face has this shut downness. It's not open and bright, and we don't see the person that we love. We just see a completely physical representation that doesn't even necessarily look like the person we love, because what made that face stretch out in the way that it did and look the way it did isn't there anymore. Raymond Moody was on my show last year. He's the one who coined the acronym NDE for near-death experience. He's considered the world scholar on NDEs and somewhat on the process of dying. And he said that repeatedly worldwide, there's reports of a gray mist leaving the body can be seen. I know that one of the things I talk about in my book that I bring up is that this couple did a study, and the origination of the word living room comes from when there were no funeral homes and it wasn't an industry, and instead people had, and this is at the turn, all the way up until the turn of the century in the early 1900s. I don't even know when the funeral industry became what is an industry, but we all the way up until it became an industry had the worshiping and mourning and celebration, however we chose to frame it, of the one who just passed away, who we loved, in our homes, in a front room. The coffin was there and the person was on display. And so they named it the living room intentionally because it was pretty much conceived of as the death room. So that's where we get the name in English of living room. This is in America. And so it's interesting because I was bringing that sandwiched in the context of talking about how we have disconnected in the West, and particularly in America, from anything that's invisible, from the intangible, from the unseen, from the power. Because coming from the East and living there for 10 years and specifically investigating the invisible source of power, I have had my mind turned inside and out, and I understand that I am animated, I have the energy levels I have, I live the life I do because of my vital life force energy, and that gets affected by my thoughts. I've studied the science behind it. I wrote about it in my book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, and I present it to a Western mind in such a way that the common feedback has been that you help me understand it, Allison, in a new way, and I understand it now. I think I tend to explain the basics of it and the mechanics of it in such a way that I break it down so it's not ooey-gooey or woo-woo, and it's actually, you can understand it, because it's worth understanding, because one of my pains in my heart is listening to fellow Americans suffer and struggle or not simply be as full-on vital and happy as they can be because they don't understand that the power is in the invisible. The power is not on the physical plane. But we in America, for a variety of reasons that, again, I explored in my book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, is we were geared because of our religions, because of our science, to look at the physical, not the invisible. And in fact, the Catholic Church, it's interesting because there is a common thread in my Catholic clients, and there's this like extra edge towards psychicness. There's this extra fear or paranoia towards the mind. But comparatively, we've grown up in a culture, if you trace it, and again, if you read the book, you'll see me doing this. If you trace it, you can see how science, first we went to priests and we divulged our human neuroses that either was were just in our mind or we acted upon and needed to confess and get absolved of that. Or, okay, so we go to confession and we get rid of it. And then as science came in and took, it started to compete with the church, and then eventually they worked out a relationship and science began to kind of more somewhat dominate the Western Hemisphere paradigm of what we tend to consider more reliable or believe in more as a societal functioning, not as like individuals or communities, because they could circle around a church more than they do around science, but as a societal functioning, what we accept as a group collective consent is we need stuff to be proven. And that's what we go to science for. So science came in, and because they could study more easily the physical, they could measure, obviously, the physical, consciousness or the invisible got known as the hard problem. So it was hard to study. And it was elusive, and it couldn't be pinned down, and it couldn't be measured. So it was left to the side. And who picked that area up in our world except for the priests, the psychics, and the psychologists eventually? But we have no systematic way as our cultural backdrop, as our cultural values in the West, of how to work with the invisible. In fact, we don't even value it. And that's why I wrote my book, because after living here for a year and a half, I realized, oh my God, there is so much unnecessary suffering happening because there are tools, there are systematic ways that are available to work with the thoughts, and it doesn't have to be in a formal meditation practice. I have found that that is one of the tools for sure. I mean, I've been doing it for 20 years. I've been teaching it for 17. It's absolutely, for me, it feels like it's the most primary tool. Even before energy healing, I was meditating because it helps me not see myself through my thoughts. It helps me not see the world through my thoughts. It helps me have a way to take the power from out from the mind. And Leeson Bernstein and us and myself, we talked about this two shows back. Catherine McIntosh was last week and we were talking about how our thoughts affect our body. And 2 weeks back, Leeson and I were on, both our Access Consciousness facilitators. I've been dedicating quite a bit to Access because there are some good tools in there with how to work with our thoughts more actively. More so for the American mind, where there's issues of concentration or there's issues of focus or there's issues of ADD and ADHD, how we just, and the discipline isn't there necessarily to do a meditation practice. And I'll talk about that more in a minute. But I am an Access Consciousness Bars facilitator, as many of you know, because of the strength of, it's almost like active ways to work with our thoughts. So when we're meditating, it's an active way to observe our thoughts. And over time, with a sustained meditation practice, we're rewiring our neurological habits. So we're rewiring as we come off of, okay, so here's what I say, thinking, that was thinking, pull off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. And then in the next minute, thinking, pull off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. And it's constant. It's a constant rerouting. And at first, people usually observe that their minds are wild and they, and you're kidding me? How do you have a mind without thoughts? And I tell my students, your mind is getting self-conscious in the very, very, very beginning stages. And this is what I just said I was going to get back to. The American mind is really set up to understand and feel at meditation because of our misunderstandings of what, because we approach meditation with an American mindset, goal-oriented, want to get it done, want to be productive, and want tangible results, and we want them now, frankly. And nothing of what I say is meant to be putting down America or criticizing America. I'm just speaking contrasts because I've had that opportunity. I've made the choices in my life that have given me the opportunity to uproot myself and live overseas many different times, in the longest time, the 10-year patch in Asia, and to give these eyes this contrast back to you guys. That's my gift. These radio shows weekly are my gift. They're a free way to understand how you can have more and be more and what else is possible. So the contrast is that here, when we sit down to meditate, we expect to be able to have silence. We expect to be able to have a quiet sense of calm. Like, we expect meditation to produce peace instantly. I am meditating. It is peaceful. If I am not feeling peaceful, then I am not successfully meditating. Ugh, I hate it. I can't get peaceful. I can't meditate. And we give up within the first or third to the third try. The American way of life doesn't lend well to meditation. And we're, a lot of it is just the structure of our customer service. I mean, God bless our customer service. I've said that traveling around the world. You know, we have the best customer service on the planet. We get what we want when we want it. And if we don't, we complain and then we do, is how it used to be. Anyway, that's changed a bit. But nonetheless, that thread is still there behind our culture. And I'm not, it is what it is, hey? I'm not good or bad. All of it's good, all of it's bad. It is what it is. But what that gives us is that feeling like we can demand. And that's not even us. It gives our minds. This is the key. This is the key distinction. And this is one of the two most important shifts a human being can make, is when we realize and we can separate from our thoughts and our minds that the outsiders to ourselves, our family, our friends would label and point to as our personality. That's how she is. That's who she is. That's how he is. That ego identity. That's the mind for the most part. But that's not who we are. And I don't mean that in an ooby groovy way. I mean that in the way that every human mind is a neurotic mind. Work with the neuroses. So when I look at the Catholic Church, as I do in my book, and talk about it a little bit, just in the history of how we got steered away from dealing with the mind, there is this sense of, I can't go in because there's the monsters and the boogeymen's lurking in the back of my mind. There's darkness back there, and I need to run from it. And so a lot of the spinning on the surface of life with buying and consuming and producing, all of our lifestyle cultural values tumble together to be what it is, having us focus away from the mind and onto the physical. But what that sets us up for is not being in tune with ourselves and not recognizing or being attuned to the value of the invisible life force energy that pulsates and permeates everything alive. So that when we drop this body, or when we die, that part of us is still alive. It leaves the body. If we want to come out of the science behind it for a minute, for those of you who don't necessarily need the science, here's another way. I use this to explain actually to my dad when my mom passed, and he was struggling with that in reincarnation. And I know that, for example, Brian Weiss talks about many lives, many masters. And I saw him speak one time at one of the Hay House I Can Do It, the one in 2010 here in Tampa. And he was talking about how he had a patient that had something go on and he couldn't get to clear it as a therapist. I don't remember particularly what kind, if he was a psychoanalyst or what. And so he decided to do some kind of hypnosis therapy that he had learned recently, or maybe he went to learn it in order to be able to help this patient. I don't know. The patient, so he does this hypnosis kind of thing. The patient falls under whatever it is that Dr. Weiss is doing. And this is an MD, by the way. I believe Dr. Brian Weiss is an MD, and he finds the patient talking in a, I think it was an Irish tongue, a different accent. And the patient starts to talk about, like it was the 1800s or 1700s, talks about a village there, names a pub that is family owned or something. And so Weiss has his assistant go and trace, and all of that proves to be valid. And so Weiss's mind is blown. And he has countless files at this point from what it seems like, I hope I'm paraphrasing him correctly, of assistants researching what the patients will say during the regression to show that, in fact, the information they're coming up with, this past life they're connecting to, is actually valid because they have access to information that they wouldn't otherwise have. Now, you could have doubt and skepticism coming up right now. Oh, okay, so they could research something on Wikipedia or the internet or Google it and come in with all this information memorized. Sure, absolutely. Sylvia, if you want to doubt away. Sylvia Brown is also one who has had thousands and thousands and thousands of clients and readings done, and she has her assistants check the information that these people will offer when they're regressed under a level of hypnosis, and the same results, that they'll talk in an accent, they'll slip into the language that they've never used in their life before. Family members are surprised that they're fluent in German all of a sudden when they go back and tell them about it. So the assistants will go and check the information, and I think it was up in the high 90s, like 99% of the time, it's proven accurate what comes through. For me, that's as close as we're going to get to proof for reincarnation. Living in the East, the entire Eastern Hemisphere operates under that as a cultural backdrop because it's just so infiltrated within every cultural value and structure in the way they organize their cultures. Reincarnation is a given. They have a sense of antiquity and ancientness in connection to their history, partially because of this, and then karma comes out of this, and then you know, do right now or you'll suffer later. I mean, then that's their form of being able to rein in and control the behavior of the masses, as opposed to laws and rules the way that we do here in the West. So there's guilt and shame involved in there too. Each system is what it is, but the premise it's the acceptance that reincarnation happens. So around this time is when I usually, in this kind of context of information, when I was teaching in the classroom, I would ask my students, how many of you guys have had dreams that have come true? And throughout the 12 years, usually it was every single student's hand went up. So if these kinds of things are happening more regularly than not, and in our culture, it's considered that woo-woo to talk about, why is that? What are we so afraid of? Because what if there was nothing wrong and we could look into our minds and it would be okay? Who would have the power then? You and me, to change our thoughts when we find this is something in my life I don't dig, doesn't feel good. So what choices am I making? What thoughts am I listening to that are causing me to value this situation enough to keep it happening? And a lot of the time, that's not conscious. A lot of the time, you need somebody like me to help get to the hidden beliefs pretty quickly, you know, and clear them, pull them. So on that note, one of the other things that I have been really hearing a lot of, so for the last like 3 months, I have been intensively working with people around, leaders around the world on the fear about there not being enough money. And in fact, I've heard one spiritual leader say, this is coming from Jacqueline Joy of Diamond Alignment, which you can check out too. It's alternating up there with the banner for my book. It's our spiritual work now is with money. And that seems like a radical thing to say. You know, why would we bring spirituality in with money? Aren't they distinctly separate? I mean, isn't that what we do here in the West? I mean, spirituality, we go to church for, or temple, or the mosque for our version of spirituality, or we just do it on our own, or we don't believe in spirituality, and we're just completely earthly and material. But that distinctly separate
way of looking at earthly goods and materialism and money. It's different than my heart. It's different than God. It's different than spirituality. It's different than the heavens. I can't take my earthly goods with me. All of that is being asked to kind of come together now. It's an amazing time after that December 21st alignment in 2012. And we are in the age of spiritual awakening. And it's just an energy that's knocking people on their asses. I don't know if I can say ass. I think I can. It really is. I mean, I'm seeing people just spin, not able to remember time. Linearity dates are just gone in a way that they were not before. It was more solid and more linear and concrete, sequential. And people are having a harder time focusing or paying attention. They're distracted even more easily. They're picking up, you know, phone calls from somebody we were just thinking about happens. We see a person we're just thinking about happen or occur. We see them and that occurs after we were just thinking about them the day before. So there's an increased level of, I want to say, psychicness. And that is, I mean, when we meditate, and this is in my second book, actually, that hasn't come out yet, there's layers to progress. And one of the things that happens after we've been meditating for a while is that our senses, the thresholds that is naturally downloaded when we get our brain and our little human fetus, is these thresholds on our sensory perceptual data, equipment rather. So when data comes in, there's these thresholds that limit how much we sense, physically see, hear, taste, because we couldn't handle all the data. So there's thresholds that close that down. And so when we meditate, after a while, one of the things that we're doing is we're expanding our consciousness. We're allowing ourselves to touch in with more of our consciousness instead of just limiting it to the intellectual mind that is dealing with our day-to-day tasks, that we listen to its thoughts, and that's who we think we are, and we choose from those thoughts, and that's who we think we are, when in fact the studies are it's only 5 to, and a more generous one is 15% of where we're making our daily choices from. I've said that over and over and over again on this radio show. So if there's 95 to 85% of a part of me that's responsible for making my choices, doesn't it just logically make sense for us to look at that part of ourselves? Right. But again, in our culture, we're steered away from these original, because of these original purposes I've already mentioned, and then just now what our cultural values are. So it's slowly starting to change and then quickly starting to change. It's acting very much like quarks in quantum physics. It's not linear and predictable like Newtonian gravity or Newtonian physics. It's more like things happen in spurts, like all at once, randomly, without predictability. And huge emissions of power can happen all at once. And that's kind of like the times we're living in right now. Two, because as I say in my book, we've moved out of Newtonian physics into a time based on quantum physics. So in talking about the money now, coming back to that, the separation from the spiritual to the material, that December 21st alignment was very much the spirit about ushering in the times, the new era after 26,000 years of another era of humanity into the age of human spiritual awakening. And the way that we typically look at all of the conclusions you have around money, around being rich, around being poor, around who has money, and when they have a lot of money, what do they spend it on? Who's doesn't have a lot of money? And when they don't have a lot of money, what are they doing and what are they spending it on? What are the poor doing and not doing? What are the rich doing and not doing? And some of that is the rich are greedy. Some of that is the poor lazy. I mean, we have all of these conclusions. I happen to know quite a few rich people who are really kind. I happen to know quite a few poor people who are really not. So I think it's time we throw all of that out the window. There is also an awareness, too, that there's this collective virus of worry. I'm going to open up something to you listeners now who are not on my in my community, who I do my regular email communications with. On Monday night, because of what I've been experiencing, and just it was a jolt yesterday during Independence Day and Freedom, it just came across and through me like a jolt. to reach out to my community and offer a free call where I'm doing a transmission and then clearings and theta healings, access consciousness clearings and theta healings for our worries about money. There is such an invested energy in assuming and fearing and worrying that there isn't enough. It's such an unconscious checkout where we just adopt what the society is thinking. You must work harder to have more because expenses are increasing and insurance is increasing and we just got a certain tax cut, so that takes out how many hundreds a year or my paycheck. There is not enough, says our government. There is not enough, says the IRS, so they're more active. There is not enough, says our parents, because they have parents from the Depression era. We hear it everywhere. And for me, when I first came back here, a lot of you guys have heard me say this already too, After the first month or so, checking in with the energy around me, it blew me away. I hadn't lived in the States since 2 months before 9/11 for an extended amount of time. I returned now 3 years ago, and I couldn't believe the amount of fear around me. It made me extremely uncomfortable. And frankly, that's part of why I'm putting out this free call on Monday, because I am wanting more light and more freedom and more expansion for everybody, because this is ridiculous how much we have bought into. I have to work hard. I have to struggle. This is hard. This is difficult. Why do we do that? You know, I watched The Matrix, the first Matrix, the whole way through last night for the first time. It's funny. It came out the year that I moved to Taiwan, and I live in the Matrix. I mean, I live life aware of the Matrix. So it was the same thing with the Harry Potter books, even though I was teaching when the first one came out, I was teaching at the middle school level, and that was all my kids were reading, and I was a reading teacher. It was really kind of weird. I wasn't reading Harry Potter. I already knew it. Just like I know the Matrix intuitively, I live it. And it's like, I was watching it last night, and it was really, it's just choice. And at the end, how they talk about, you know, the suffering. The average person just wants to stay enclosed in the system because it's safer. If I don't question, I don't even mean this in the way that your ears are used to hearing it. I mean it in a new way. I don't mean the system like the government. I don't mean conspiracy. I don't mean any of that. What I mean is the way that you have been handed down life works. That the physical is more important. That we need to pay attention to the physical. That something is only important when it's physical, and something is to be doubted, and we're to be skeptical of something invisible that isn't proven yet, and that our thoughts don't matter, our minds don't matter, and we are to be afraid of what lurks in our minds. That is what I'm talking about, because when I came back here, I could feel the fear. I could feel the worry about the money. I never expected to do work with money or relationships. I'm not that kind of a coach. I'm a holistic life coach with a PhD in it, geared towards health, geared towards having more vitality and well-being in the body and spiritual awakening, you know. But what I realized was people are more worried about the everyday. And it is in the everyday that the spirituality is, that the awakening is. It is in allowing ourselves to have more light and ease that we look to God or a divine source or the sky or nature for within us, that we allow that part of us that is 85 to 95% of us to connect in and to be cleared and cleansed by the actual natural inherent love and joy and health and beauty and goodness that's in the life power of now, says that the biggest problem on the planet right now is the mind's dominance. Our advertising industry, which I studied, it was one of my minors in college as an undergraduate, our advertising industry makes us feel inadequate. In fact, there's studies done that prove that advertising, when you live exposed to advertising, it reduces your self-esteem. Our advertising makes us have certain expectations, and it works on the ego, which means it works on the mind. And so we have certain expectations, and it helps support the mind in being more demanding. And we don't have a level of discipline in this way. And I don't mean to say that as a culture we are entirely undisciplined. I don't mean to say that as a culture we're not good or strong and we're all obese. That's not what's being said here. Don't construe it and make it into something it's not. What I am saying is a simple it's an observation, and it's also a contrast. And it's not about you. It's not about a group. It's about the nature of the mind. Every human mind is neurotic, so let's learn to work with that neuroses. So one of the things I've now chosen to do is, so yesterday I got a big jolt. Let me offer a free call to help do clearings and transmissions and theta healings on money. So that's going to happen Monday night from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern time or New York time. You can go to my website. The way there is clicking on one of the links on the bottom right there that say book a individualized yoga session or a personal training session or book a holistic life coaching and energy healing session. Those all lead to my website. It's Allison with one L, J, just the letter J, and then KAY.com. Opt in. You'll get a free 45-minute theta healing for success with a bunch of theta healing clearings for success when you opt into my newsletter, and then you'll get the information sent to you on Monday about the free call. The free call isn't marketing anything. The free call isn't the start of a launch of a telecall series. It is a gift. So please cut out the sarcasm and the fear and the snideness and the worry that I'm trying to market something, because we have that here in our country, because we are so marketed to, because we are such a consumer-driven country. Let's get control of it. Let's get control of ourselves. Let's stop letting our thoughts and our minds have such enormous power in our lives, when in fact a thought comes and it goes. And it is really, when you get down to it, our choice what to listen to. It's just like we're a kid in a candy store and we have a row of candy and they're pretty wrapped colors, and one's pink and one's purple and one's blue and one's yellow and one's orange and one's red and one's one flavor and another flavor. And what flavor do you want? And you unwrap it and you taste it and you spit it out because it's just bad. You didn't want that flavor. So you reach for another one and you unwrap that and you suck on it. And it's like, that's sweet. And then you reach for another one of those kinds, right? It's the same thing with our choices that we make and the thoughts in our minds. If we can get better at observing our thinking, at being more detached, so that we have this sense of, here's my small little mind self, my little errant child, because that's really what it is. And here's my higher self, the more disciplined part of me that can observe, you're making that choice again. And that's not what you don't like when you make that choice, how you feel after you do it. That's like bad sour candy that you spit out. So what are you doing making that choice again? What is it that you like about the sourness? Why do you need the sourness? When that sweetness is like, you remember it? It felt so good. That's another awareness that I've had this week. I've had it for years, but to a new level of, like the awareness of how much we're attuned to suffering and willing and habitually choosing it, when an everyday person is offered what is the common response. I mean, there's books written on the behavioral change procedure. There's books written for personal trainers on how do you encourage change that label the different stages of how ready a person's mind is for change or not. I mean, there's a whole industry, obviously, called self-help, of which I'm partially in, around change. So why is change such a big deal? What is it that we favor about the situation that we want change that keeps us in a situation? Or just totally avoiding it with the checkout mechanisms, you know, with having another gadget, with surfing more on the internet, or with watching another movie on our pad, or with, you know, all of the checkout mechanisms we have. I'm not saying that anytime we engage in that, we're checking out. But it is said, as many of you obviously know, there's a massive disconnect from what's real because it's too much. And so we have this way of just getting by on a day-to-day basis that, in fact, isn't healthy. And so we end up getting woken up instead one day by some kind of crisis that causes us to either wake up, spiritual awakening, that's the era we're in now, to either wake up or to not, and to suffer even further into this crisis. And I'm hearing from a lot of my people right now,
confirmation of something I said last year on this radio show quite consistently, that if we don't choose to get through whatever it is that is the crisis or the lesson of that time in our life, then it just, we that challenge, that issue, that thing, then we end up suffering even harder and even more than we ever did before. Because the nature of the planet right now is an energy that's supporting change and making choices that are for the highest good, both yours and the collective, operating at a really high level. And when we're not, that's getting flushed up to the surface like a zit with its toxins. And what about if nothing's wrong? What if there's nothing to fix? What if there's nothing to heal? Because, you know, I could do another profession. It's okay with me, you know? I mean, I would love, I'm not even going to go into my dreams right now. This isn't the space for it, but the title of my book is What If There's Nothing Wrong? So I've also started offering, this is marketing right now. And why is it? Because it's something that I do that helps people clear out their stuff that's in the way of having nothing be wrong. Go to my website, look at the group call, and the group healing, I think it said, and you can check that out. It's a way discounted. In fact, I think I'm going to go ahead and do this for you. Those of you who are listening right now and in the future listening to the archived recording, I usually only give this at my workshops, people who actively make an effort to attend, but let's just say this is today's version of a workshop because you've made an active effort to attend this radio show. And go ahead and go to AllisonJK.com, put in, you're not going to find it because it's a hidden page, /special offer. Because if you were to go to my website as it is right now and you were to see, go under services and you were to see group healing, it's offered at $147. The special offer is $50 off of that, $97. And it's every Tuesday night I do an hour of Theta healing for whatever's showing up. And then you get a recording within 48 hours, and it's amazing, over and over and over again. A part of the reason why I'm doing it is that there's an increased demand for access to the Theta Healing clearings amongst my people and as I've been out and about. And part of this is in response not just to the increased demand, but into the increased desire to have a tool at every affordable level of having access to this work with me or this work. Well, so here's my business, is work with me to be able to clear out the thoughts, to clear out where we're stuck, because we can be aware, oh, wow, I'm making that choice again. Why am I doing that? Why do I like that self-destruction? Why do I like that sour taste? And when we can't get through it, you know, get somebody to get our back, and that's what I do. And I get these Hawkeyes, you guys, that just seem to cut right through. So I don't waste any time. And in the Theta Healing, my intuition, it's been really, it's been a great learning curve. And a way to hone my intuition. So I go up and I pull the beliefs that are people's in that week's call. It's a monthly subscription so that you get it every week. And whether you're there or not, you don't have to be on the call because I'm tuning in. It's the very first one, a woman hadn't joined yet. She joined after that first week. And I realized in retrospect that one of the groups of healings that I did was totally hers. It was her energy. So time and space apparently, as you've heard, don't matter in this, and they don't. I mean, I experienced that. These are a really great way if you stay with the Theta Healing consistently. What I've seen as results in my clients is continual lightening and a continual improvement in their lives because it gets at the hidden conclusions in that 85 to 95% of us that is what we're making our choices from on a daily basis. So we could be observing our conscious mind. We could be reining it in, coming off of, go thinking, pull off of the thoughts and come back to the breath. And we can have more focus on the present moment and be more able to detach from our thoughts. But that's only at the conscious mind level. Then there is subconscious and unconscious beliefs that we have formed at some point in our lives, unknowingly, unconsciously, that we could be choosing the sour candy, saying that we want the sweet candy, and not be able to stop choosing the sour candy. That's what I want to help people with because I want more freedom. I want to feel people freer around me. This is not the time anymore
to continue to choose contraction and to continue to choose self-destruction and continue to choose in a way that you know shuts down your joy and shuts down your life force and shuts down your expansion and your bigness and your aliveness. It's too sensitive of a times we're living in now. That transition we made in December really upped the game in the way that our thoughts are creating the results quicker. And so that then motivates us to want to work with our thoughts that much more, because whether we're in denial and refusing to believe that our thoughts create our reality or we are believing it, it doesn't matter. Our thoughts are creating reality, and it's being done quicker nowadays than ever before. So if you have a skeptic, I mean, and I'm not even trying to convince a skeptic, you know, I'm not going to speak to the resistance. Everybody comes to it in their own time. But you can observe it happening. You can start with something small. Like if you need a certain type of service that you haven't used before, you all of a sudden need a shoe repaired and you haven't needed a shoes repaired before. You need a seamstress and you haven't needed that before. Put out there, have the thought, I need to find a local seamstress. Watch it happen within 24 hours, depending on who you are. It might happen in 48. It might happen in one. Play with the easier. I don't. So if you're on disability and you want to win the lottery, I don't mean use it this way because, you know, good luck with that. What I do mean is to play with it in ways that you can see it show up. So choose something that's more likely to show up instead of like trying to prove this whole thing wrong so you can show how much it doesn't work, because like it or not, it works. And you can read my book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, and you can get given the science behind it. Or listen when Bruce talks in a couple of weeks or to some of the other guests I've had on and listen to the mechanics and you can hear the truth in it. You know when you hear truth and you know when you're in denial. So if you're choosing denial, what's the value of it? Look into it. Why not go for more freedom? That's the thing I don't understand. Why do we choose limitation? Is it really that comfortable? Do we really hate change that much? I mean, why do we make choices that cause us to be uncomfortable when we spend so much money on luxury to be comfortable? When the real comfort happens, when there's peace in our heart and contentment in our body and comfort in our body. And joy, that's a calmness, that's a loving presence, that's a vibration. It's not a romantic, it's a tone, a vibration, a currency, like a current, like electrical. Yeah, I know. If you look around and you listen to people, I mean, when do you walk into a room and it's more easy to slide into, yeah, I know, that's the way it is, that kind of complaining tone? As opposed to it not being an effort that you acknowledge mentally and consciously, this person is trying to be positive and steer the conversation into a positive direction. What if we just walked into a room and just started talking, and what we were talking about was the good time we had yesterday and the good time we're going to have tomorrow and how easy and light everything was and how our health was great, our family was great, our money flows were great, we're going on vacation, and I just got a promotion, and my God, I got my age, my biological age checked, and I'm 20 years younger than my numerical age. What if there's nothing wrong? Look at the name of this radio show, Create Your Best Life Ever. What else is possible? You know? So everything and anything, here comes an access clearing, everything and anything that doesn't allow for all of that, and everything I brought up, are you now willing to destroy and uncreate and return to sender with consciousness attached? Time is a godzillion, yes. Right, wrong, good, bad, pot, all nines, shorts, boys, and beyonds. If you need an explanation of those words that I just said, drdanehere.com. Go to the clearing statement underneath free stuff, or go to theclearingstatement.com. It'll explain the words I just used from the Access Consciousness clearing statement. Vacuums up a whole bunch of energy on a whole bunch of different levels. I went out this morning to do my prayer work. It's funny, look at that prayer work. Look at that work connected to prayers. This is one of prayers work. And what that means is I'm sitting there with a couple of different books where I connect in with certain angels and ascended masters, and then access consciousness clearings, and then some theta healing commands, and then me just sitting there with my feet on the ground looking at the sky and trees every day facing north. And this morning I went out there to the same location I've been going out to for 2.5 years, and only for the second time ever I saw a red-tailed hawk. Now that's my totem. It's about power and kundalini releasing when you really step forward on your path. And it's also for me about protection. And it swooped right by my head. And for a hawk to be flying that low, it's really kind of rare. I have a background with the Audubon Society during my master's study, so I know birds. It's a wonderful way to tune into the universe's beauty and all of the beauty that exists around us, all the aliveness that's always there. So after seeing the hawk, within a minute, I started to do my gratitude and thanking the universe in the way that I do. And a dragonfly butterfly flutters right by and stays with me for like the first half of my prayers. I come inside, I have my first session with somebody, and I leave and go back outside, and I'm thinking about today's show, and I see another butterfly that stays with me the entire time I'm thinking about today's show. Butterfly symbolizes transformation. In the Native American tradition and in the lore that I've read, particularly through Ted Andrews' Animal Speak, and what I've heard with the work I've done with the Native Americans, is when it flutters by your head and you're having a certain thought, it's confirmation that that thought is accurate. On that note, AllisonJK.com, opt in, get that free Success Theta Healing recording so you can get access to the free call Monday night for Freedom with Money. Let's have some freedom. We just had July 4th. Many blessings, much love and light. Cheers.
Thank you again for tuning in to Create Your Best Life Ever, featuring Allison J.K. Please join us again next Friday afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America 7th Wave channel. Now, enjoy your weekend and start making positive changes today.